Welcome to the Kindling's Muse podcast.
Hi, this is Dick Staub with another in our Journeys series, conversations with thoughtful creatives and cultural influencers on their life, work, and personal journey. Today, we continue our conversation with Sarah Miles. This is Dick Staub. We're continuing our conversation with Sarah Miles. Her book is Take This Bread, A Radical Conversion, published by Ballantine. So you now go to the church, you've got this great idea, and you meet a little bit of resistance.
One of the staff members later told me that at the first staff meeting when they discussed it, the reaction ranged from not over my dead body until to when hell freezes over.
Nevertheless, you do eventually prevail, and you open your very first day of your pantry. Describe what happened that day.
Well, the big truck pulled up with pallet jack, and they unloaded pallets of groceries, you know, beautiful produce from the Central Valley, donated oranges and lettuces and grapefruits and rice and beans and cereal and bread. And we lit a candle in front of the icons, and we put altar cloths on the tables all around the altar, and we opened the doors. And the first people who came were kind of blown away because we didn't ask them for ID. We didn't ask them to prove anything because it was an extension of Eucharist. It wasn't a social service program. They deserved that food about as much as I deserved communion, which is to say not particularly. And we weren't there to judge them. We were to say, you are welcome.
And you had just posted notices up around different places.
I'd gone everywhere I could in the city where I could find poor people.
And who were your volunteers when you started?
Well, when the volunteers started, there were a few people from the church who said that they'd give me a hand, including my friend Steve, who was an inspiration. But the really interesting thing that happened, Dick, was within a few months, word of mouth spread, first of all. So the 35 families turned into 100, and the 100 turned into 200, and by now we're over 450, close to 500. But the really interesting thing is that at this point, the pantry is entirely run by people who came to get food and stayed to help out. Mm-hmm. It's not run by the church. It's run by people just like me who stumbled in there because they were hungry and decided their lives had been changed and they wanted to feed other people.
Now, at first, you had some donations, financial donations to get started. I mean, you're all volunteers, but to actually get the food.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing how cheap it is to buy food from these food banks. It costs us about $1 a family per week. So we got some small donations, and the church members began to kick in $5 here, $20 there. And then these people would be standing in line and say, hey, can I give a hand?
There's a number of stories, and just because of a lack of time, we can't go into them, but a few things happen. First of all, is the numbers grow. Another thing that happens is ministry beyond feeding begins to happen mm-hmm. because you're meeting people. Right. They've got needs. They want you to pray for them. They want you to do other stuff. So you become kind of a parish within the parish.
I think that's exactly right.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly right. And like every parish, it has moments of transcendent beauty and care and moments of bitchiness and ugliness and backbiting. But it is a church, and the people who are in it, who are the volunteers who are running it, have become a church community that's as real as any other.
You have a capacity problem because this word is out, it's getting bigger, and you have a most unlikely angel appear. He's one of the interesting characters in this book, Derek Howard.
Derek was a complete stranger. Blessed be God the word. Derek Derek is a aggressive tort lawyer. And I had never met the man. He had apparently gone and run into a friend of mine, and he was sort of complaining about the church doesn't do anything for poor people, blah, blah, blah. And this guy said, well, Derek, my daughter goes to a nice church called St. Gregory's. They have a food program. You should check it out. And apparently he checked it out, though I didn't know that. And he called me up and said, you know, I win class action settlements against bad guys. And when there's money left over after all the plaintiffs have been paid, the court distributes it to charity. Do you want to be one of the charities? And I was like, sure, whatever. Thanks so much for calling. And he signed me up. And to my great shock, I got a letter from the court saying that they had given us $200,000 to be paid $20,000 a year for 10 years to fund the operations of the food pantry. So we took that money and we started to give it away. And we began to work with other churches, with schools, with nonprofits, with housing projects, and we gave away that money so they could start their own food pantries.
Now, there's something about people with wealth and power that is really important to understand, and you illustrated it about as perfectly as it can be illustrated with Derek, because it turns out that he's hungry.
He wanted
is the amazing story of this guy who has made it possible for your kind of program and vision to be extended and multiplied and to multiply the loaves and fishes, but then he confesses to you a hunger that he has.
That's right. And you know, I think looking at it, I think that this is actually what God uses in everybody, that it isn't our brilliance and it isn't our goodness and it certainly isn't our obedience to religious rituals. God uses our hungers to pull us closer to other people. And to be able to look at your hunger and see it not as a weakness, but as a way that you can be brought into communion is really powerful, whoever you are.
He's sitting in his office. And he says, I can't believe this, but I'm sitting here in this powerful office and I feel like I'm going to cry.
He did.
He asked you to do something for him.
He asked me to pray for him and he asked me to write out a prayer in my handwriting that he could read so that he remembered why he was doing his work.
And what's funny, what I love about the story is he's basically confessing that he has a spiritual need and capacity, but that religion just doesn't do it for him. And that's the way so many people, that's the way... you could say you were and you are. I mean, the wonderful thing about this story, I often tell people that my understanding of the church is kind of like an episode of Northern Exposure. It's this really weird group of people that have been called together. And on television, it's entertaining. But in real life, it's a total pain. But it's what it is, you know. And you have to decide whether you're going to keep believing in spite of this. And then you reach a certain point where you realize, as you said, it's not something you do alone. It's because of this, you know.
Right, right. And the thing, great thing for me about church is you don't get to pick who's in it.
Oh, yeah.
You get who you're dealt, and that's where you start.
Well, there's wonderful stories in Take This Bread, A Radical Conversion by Sarah Miles, about the spiritual memoir of a 21st century Christian. I want to end with two other just short little stories. One is your friend Millie, who's dying, and the power of the meal that you experience with her. Can you just tell us that story real briefly?
Very quickly, yeah. An old friend was dying, and was dying very unhappily and very angry and bitter. And I was taking care of her and just lost in sadness about her bitterness and her rage. She didn't want to die, and she was being as ugly as possible at the end. And I remember walking into her kitchen. It was time for her to take her pills. And ripping up a piece of toast into little pieces so she could swallow them. And as I was breaking it, I realized I was celebrating the Eucharist and that bread was the communion bread. And I took it back to her and said, Millie, this is for you. And it, once again, there was something in that room that was not me and that was not her, that was bigger than both of us. Amazing sense of the physical presence of God.
And the final little story, capstone, is you tell your mom that you're a Christian.
And you know, like everybody else, my mom, of course, was great. It turned out that my fears about her were all of my fears projected on her. It was my weakness that made me think, oh, she's going to be mad at me. She won't understand me. She won't be able to love me. Of course, she was incredibly generous and kind. It had been my own fear that had been in the way of that. But yes, in order to talk to her, I had to actually cook her a meal.
Yeah. Well, folks, this is an amazing story. The title is Take This Bread, A Radical Conversion is the subtitle. published by Ballantine. Our guest has been Sarah Miles. We've tried to give you a little taste of the stories and experiences and phenomenal ministry that pours out of Sarah's journey. But you can learn a lot more and spend a lot more time with her by picking up your own copy of Take This Bread. This concludes our conversation with Sarah Miles. Thank you for listening to Journeys on the Kindlings Muse. Thank you for listening to the Kindlings Muse. If this program sparks something in you, I invite you to participate at www.thekindlings.com. That's K-I-N-D-L-I-N-G-S. Share this program, tell a friend, or just leave a comment at www.thekindlings.com.